U.S. inflation fears continue to stalk global markets. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Prices of long-term U.S. government bonds have tumbled about 10% since the start of the year, and that's again sent fresh jitters through global stock markets today. It's all about worries over how central banks are grappling with rising inflation expectations caused by massive stimulus programs designed to help economies recover from the coronavirus crisis. Stocks across Asia mounted sharp losses today. The Shanghai Composite, Japan's Nikkei, and the Hang Seng in Hong Kong all shed 2%. Here in Europe, key benchmarks in London, Paris, and Frankfurt are down as much as 1.2%. Russ Mould, investment director at AJ Bell, says now it's up to central bank chiefs who need to outline a clear roadmap for how they'll ease record levels of economic support.
You've actually had regulators in China and Australia this week asking the very same question, warning of, yes, it's great that we may be about to see an economic recovery, but a lot of the money that central banks and possibly governments have pumped into the economy has found its way into the financial markets, and they have got, in some pockets, you could say, a little bit overheated. So the debate now for central bankers and investors is to what degree do they let the economy run hot to make sure that it is recovering, but equally they don't want it to let run too hot because then interest rates have to go up. That weighs down the global's debt pile, and it could make financial markets very, very volatile.
And we'll hear from Fed Chairman Jay Powell on this matter. But what can central banks do? Because they're sort of caught in a catch-22, aren't they? They've got economies that still need the support, but as you say, money that's found its way into financial markets.
It's a very difficult balancing act. I mean, it's interesting that there is some chatter now in markets that Mr. Powell and the Federal Reserve, when they next report on the 17th of March, talk about reviving Operation Twist, which is a program that the Fed tried 9 years ago, trying to adjust bond yields by buying bonds that mature a long time in the future and selling bonds that actually are due to be repaid in a very, very near term. So that's one option they've got. But generally speaking, what they've been trying to rely on in the last while is talking to markets and trying to gently nurse them through and lay the groundwork for as and when they want to tighten policy. But at the moment, Mr. Powell's official statement is no plans to tighten policy for the next 2, 3, or even 4 years. He wants to see unemployment come down in America, and he's prepared to take the chance on inflation going up as a result.
And as we know, communication is a huge part of that strategy. But elsewhere in the markets today, we have oil prices rising. There's an OPEC meeting. And according to some reports, they seem to be flip-flopping on whether to extend current production cuts for another month or increase output at this meeting. What do you think the story is there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a 500,000 barrel change in production that we're talking about here. So it's only around 0.5% of global demand. So it's not a huge number. So again, OPEC, like central banks, are trying to tread the balance between maintaining prices that they want so they can, you know, fund their own budgets, maintain their welfare and social programs, and not drive oil prices up too much, because really high oil prices can act like a tax on consumers and corporations and slow economic growth down. So there is a balancing act there. They'll also be looking at how the Texas freeze has impacted oil prices and maybe squeeze them a little bit higher. And given this inflation debate, they probably don't want to set themselves up as a potential punch bag if inflation does really start to pick up and oil prices are part of that, because that sort of thing sends shudders through everybody from central bankers to investors to consumers.
AJ Bell's Russ Mould, always great to chat with you.
Thank you.
Well, to vaccines now. Today, Austria's Chancellor Sebastian Kurz and Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen will travel to Israel. They're looking to speed up what they see as the European Union's slow progress at vaccine procurement. The pair want to agree a plan for common production of vaccines against coronavirus mutations. The BBC's Bethany Bell has more from Vienna.
There's growing frustration in a number of European countries about the slow rollout of vaccines. Mr. Kurz said that while the EU's vaccine procurement had been right in principle, the European Medicines Agency had been too slow to approve coronavirus vaccines. And he criticised supply bottlenecks from pharmaceutical companies. Austria, he said, should not be solely dependent on the EU for future vaccines. Now he and his Danish counterpart are travelling to Israel, where they're expected to agree on common production of second-generation vaccines. Slovakia, Hungary and the Czech Republic have issued their own approvals for Russian and Chinese vaccines.
The BBC's Bethany Bell reporting there. Meanwhile, Britain's medicines regulator said today it's already set up a fast-track approval process for authorised vaccines that have been modified to fight new coronavirus variants. The Indian Ocean is a vital shipping corridor that sees more than half of the world's ocean-traded oil passing through it each day. The area has become a source of competition between India and China, vying for increased control and influence. One nation caught in the middle of that is Sri Lanka, and this week the country announced it'll build a new container port terminal with help from India and Japan. The BBC's Renga Sirilal in Colombo explains, though, getting that project off the ground won't be easy.
Last month, Sri Lankan government cancelled a deal with India and Japan to develop eastern terminal of the Colombo port. China is also operating one of the key terminals next to eastern terminal. Port workers and the now government have protested, giving this strategically important position to India. Because of that, the present government cancelled that deal last month. Now the cabinet of ministers have decided to grant a new terminal, which is Western Terminal, to India's Adani Group and a company which is nominated by the Japan for a joint venture to develop.
Is the question for the Sri Lankan government then sort of balancing the need and desire to do more of this economic development for its own country with the ongoing political competition between China and India?
Yes, Victoria, that is true. Sri Lanka is located in a very strategical position in the Indian Ocean. China, especially with their Belt and Road Initiative, they have taken Sri Lanka as one of the key partners. So they wanted to develop Sri Lankan infrastructure projects, which the opposition and the analysts allege that China is trying to trap Sri Lanka into Chinese debt trap.
Now, ultimately, is the new agreement that we saw this week, is it aimed at really giving Sri Lanka bigger trade status in the region or India?
Actually, Victoria, if you look at Eastern Terminal, if the government-owned, state-owned Sri Lanka Port Authority is going to develop it, at the same time, India, Japan and Sri Lanka jointly developing a Western Terminal, whereas already China Merchant Port Holding Limited, they have already started operations of another container terminal. So with all these terminals coming into operation at the same time, it's going to be a battle between port giants in Colombo.
The BBC's Ranga Sirilal in Colombo. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Victoria.
And here in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.